if anybody has something they want to share at any point. Sorry, Jody, were you going to say something?
No, just Lisa had to cancel. Oh. So, and I'm a little worried that it might get set aside for too long now, but we'll see what happens. So I did start a collaborative document for all of our ideas to go on, and she's going to look for it. So that's the plan.
Yeah, sometimes we fuss and then somebody doesn't stay on the path with us. All right. Anybody else want to just update, or anybody want to volunteer to go first with their story of their journey or any questions? See what happens when we don't have structure? We're all like, no, you go ahead. There's no right or wrong way to do it. So this is, let me just maybe set a little context. So as I said in the video, or maybe you didn't have a chance to watch the video, some of us have a mutual friend, Ted Burke, and he called this process a talk story because he lives in Hawaii now. And it's sort of the way that many Native Hawaiians talk about how when they just meet each other, they shoot the breeze or they just chat with each other. And it's sharing your talk story. And I, Marcia, who's a colleague of Heidi's, and I really liked that phrase because we liked the idea of just coming together and having an opportunity to share our story in our voice versus how other people have perceived it or how others have, even how our title or our job description sometimes, whether that be our title as a mom or as a wife or as a partner, as a sister, those titles too, sort of dictate maybe what our story is. This is sort of a chance to say what it is just from your own vantage point. And it can be a mixture of your journey in the mastermind, which of course has been super fast, or it can just be your reflections about who you are as a leader and, you know, to steal from Michelle Obama, who you're becoming. So it's all good. And people can interject, but it's really a storytelling, so it doesn't have to be conversational. But yeah. Anybody like to go first?
All right, I'll go.
All right. Thanks, Jill. And I'll watch the time, and if somebody gets a little busy, I'll say, hey, let's just start wrapping up your story.
Is this where we're supposed to talk about our pledge to or no?
Yeah, too. Totally. Thanks, Jill.
Okay.
And that might be an easy way for people to start is to share what their pledge is.
Okay. I'll get that in there somehow, I guess. And I know, too, that I think there's a gratitude piece in today, too. But, I mean, is it okay for me to start?
We just by all together.
Okay. Yeah.
Because others may not be ready for their pledge. And, yeah.
Yeah.
You make it all your own.
Okay. Well, I'm really grateful for the experience. And I have to say initially, you know, talking about titles, just the name of this, you know, mastermind, yes. I was like, oh, I'm not a mastermind. Like, I don't know if I can do that. I don't know that I, you know, what do I necessarily have to offer or contribute? So initially, that title alone sort of made me nervous, but Christy, I worked with you a ton and I trust you. So, you know, I jumped in and I'm just really grateful for the opportunity and the opportunity to meet and, you know, get to know all of you. There were so many times and I grew from, you know, the hot seat, and I love the approach that we had to it. And it did really make me, you know, ask reflective questions and think more deeply. There were many times when we were done where I just wanted to say, like, I hear you, I feel you, me too, let's talk. Like, I'm living that, you know, same experience, whether it was, you know, the things we've talked about with boundaries or communication or kind of who we are as people, if we're more introverted or extroverted, to the practice work of inclusion and LRE and having quality staff. There were just so many great connections that then made me feel like, well, yeah, I belong to this group. So that was a really great feeling that evolved throughout it, and it was really quick, but I think still, even with that short amount of time, I experienced that. I struggled with my pledges because I have two because I wanted one. I was like, well, I should really have like a practice one. Like I can't just have one that's just all about me because boundaries certainly came up. So then I was like, well, you're doing what we've read. You know, I read Jonathan Field stuff and all of that, right? We always want to put ourselves second. So one of my pledges is to commit to establishing boundaries so that in work and practice so that I can stay in line with my values. And recognizing my values are my values, whether I'm at work or at home. And I think sometimes people think they have, you know, feel like they have two sets of values, but just in more things I've kind of learned and read, it's like, you know, these are the values I bring. So pledging to establish some of those boundaries and, you know, measuring my success by looking at maybe the times that I hear the ought self saying, well, you really should do this here or say this here, but instead saying what, you know, what's in line with my values and my, you know, bringing authenticity to that conversation, which is tricky because I think there's a degree of, you know, politics, right, that goes with everything. But I'm gonna try for that. And I do have some people that I work with who would be a parallel person. I have a person who'd be parallel on that with me and some different champions. And I think, you know, I feel all of you are great mentors and people that I could reach out to for that as well. Just today, this morning, was not at a meeting because I said that I wasn't going to attend. And it was actually really hard to do because it's kind of, you know, you get on these committees and everyone's, you know, everybody I think could be everywhere and lend a voice to things like, oh, I really want your perspective or can you be on this committee or that committee? But I was able, I think through what I've learned and listening to all of you, be able to have a conversation that said, you know, I understand why you see that me being in this, you know, team might make sense, but here are some other things for us to think about. And what I'd like to do is discontinue that. So that was one step in the boundary direction. And then in a practice perspective, pledging to communicate, it's the struggle for me on some of like the things that I would like to see happening around, you know, evidence-based practices and inclusion, belonging. I loved when Heidi used that word yesterday, is that we don't operate the programs. So we're going into these programs that are operated by someone else. They're operated by Head Start or they're operated by a local district. So I tend to, I think, you know, feel like, how can I change that? Cause I don't have control over it, but what I do have control over is communicating, you know, what are the high quality aspects? What are those evidence-based practices or research-based practices that we need to key in on? So that's going to be my focus this year too, is communicating that and being at the ready for when people want to do it because I have the team who can help support it. But instead of feeling like, well, I really can't get anywhere, maybe this is the place to start.
Hmm. Okay.
That wasn't 15 minutes, but.
No, you're fine. That's only a little over 5 minutes, Jill. So if people want to comment back or I was just curious, like other than setting the boundaries and so forth, how does your future look? Like, what do you, if you were to go 5 years from now, what would you say we would see a difference in?
I would say a difference in maybe speaking my truth, not in a pushy or combative way, but feeling like I can speak it and share it. So I don't know, you might not see, I mean, because it might be something that manifests more in how I feel. Mm. But you might see it because I'd be probably less exhausted too, because I quit saying yes to everything. And then I would also, I think it would impact practice. I think if I feel more confident in doing that, then maybe some things can come to fruition and implementation.
What are you most hopeful about with those school districts and Head Starts and all those community partners? What brings you the most hope right now?
I'm hopeful because I do have good relationships with them. And I think that if I worry less about being right or feeling, you know, uneasy because something's not being implemented, I think I'm hopeful and I'm focusing more on just kind of a consistent kind of beating of the drum of, you know, a message in the work. I'm hopeful that, you know, practices will change.
Yeah. Cool. I love how you said that you feel like you belong. I need to move my iPad. I can't make it be quiet. And that's what was chiming. So just a second. Okay. So anything, anybody want to think about who's going to go next or any comments you guys have for Jill's pledges or dots you want to connect? You don't have to. I just don't want to always rush us.
I just want to say thanks, Jill, for going first. It really helps. It helps to have someone break the ice, and it was generous for you to be the one to do that, and it's great to hear some of what you got out of this and what you're looking forward to. Thanks for sharing so honestly.
Yeah. Thank you.
I like that too, Heidi, because I think sometimes we feel things inside, like, oh, we're so grateful Jill did that, but then we don't tell Jill that we're grateful that she did that. I don't know. I don't know why we don't. I don't know why we withhold some of those things. So that was also very generous of you to say that. Okay, who would like to go next with, and again, it can be your pledge. It doesn't have to be your pledge. It can be gratitude. It could be just your journey, whatever.
I'll go ahead and go next. So I'm still working on my pledge.
Okay.
And, you know, I think I have to, you know, my action step was to, you know, review my notes and to continue to focus on the things that I can do and can control, you know, thinking back to my entire, to this journey. You know, asking for what I want, I think, you know, maybe just putting things out there and not letting the fear of not being enough kind of paralyze me a little bit. You know, because I think sometimes that's getting in the way of the work that I feel is really important. Through this process and getting to know, you know, each of you, I see so many parallels. And, you know, and listening to all of your stories, it's like, oh gosh, you know, I'm struggling with that too, or I'm struggling with that too. So I see so many parallels with so many of you. And I just feel, you know, like Jill, like really, really grateful, you know, for the experience. I think part of me doesn't feel quite as isolated, perhaps. I don't know if isolated is the right word, but maybe like, oh, okay. Everybody else seems to have everything so perfect and put together. It's like, gosh, I'm not the only one that's kind of screwed up a little bit. Not that you're all screwed up, but like, doesn't have it perfect, you know? And because I think sometimes we look at other people and we think, man, they just have everything just perfectly aligned and so organized and so together, and things are just flowing, you know, everything's just has this beautiful flow to it. And so, you know, I think it's maybe I need to let go of that wanting things, that perfectionist side of like needing everything to be just so. And then when you shared the quote this, you know, at the beginning, that's what I wrote down, is I need to let go and trust a little bit more. You know, I need to let go of what has been and just, you know, trust a little more. I can't believe that it's over. I feel like I still need more, but I don't know what that looks like. I'm like, man, this is over. That's it. I still don't feel quite full.
Sorry, guys. Puppy and agrees.
Bella agrees with me. She's like, yeah, mom still needs some work.
Yeah. That's why they call it a practice, right?
Oh, right. I don't know how much, I don't really have that much more, I guess.
I was, you know, I was thinking, I listened to a podcast the other day from my friend Rosie Acosta, and one of the phrases she used made me think of you, Dana, because she said that sometimes when we say yes so much to people, or we have trouble with the boundaries or saying no, is that we're afraid that people will remove support. And I thought that was a really interesting one, or maybe it's what I read between the lines of some of your fear. It's sort of like you're the keeper, or you feel this burden of representing all of early childhood when you go to bat, or when you go to a meeting, or when you go to ask for something. And so if it's kind of like when Susan said her behavior then reflects back on the whole early intervention training program, I feel that for you. I feel that you're like, if I fail in this communication with so-and-so, or I can't leverage it, or I can't get it, then all of my people are going to fail because they won't have the support that's needed, right? So I was just curious if that phrase, that a fear of removal of support, if that did kind of fit in your brain anywhere, and what your thoughts are as you approach some of those communications with your boss and others.
I wouldn't disagree with that at all, because you know, the way that our office is set up, I'm kind of like, I'm an office of one. And while there's an early learning office as well, often the vision is quite different and the leadership is very different, and their messaging to districts is very different. So I'm having to walk a tightrope in that sometimes, and which is kind of a shame. I feel really sad about that sometimes. But that's so out of my control, other than trying to collaborate. Like, so I'm always putting the olive branch out there to try to collaborate when it's appropriate. But it's very different messaging from our offices, but it's all early childhood, whether it's early childhood special ed or it's early childhood, we're talking about 3 to 5 year old children here and families. And so it makes me sad that sometimes that messaging is it's not always the same focus. And so that's another line that I have to balance. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You read that right.
Yeah. I mean, I think Catherine has that in a lot of ways too. Mm-hmm. That is my perception. So when I heard that, I was like, that's such high stakes for you all. And probably you all do in different ways, because you're representing a larger constituency. But I think it's important to understand that there is that, fear of letting down like a whole field of people or a whole district of people that that needs to be reconciled somehow, because I'm not so sure driving yourselves crazy or saying yes to everything or feeling like you're not enough is the solution either.
True.
Right.
I think this has been a good journey. Clearly you all have helped me. I was able to face a few of my fears and move past some things, and I'm very grateful. I think I want more, but I'm very grateful.
Yeah, and I don't mean to put you on the hot seat, but I had one more for you. So when you think about, you know, you started some of your stories with the person that you took their place when they retired, and that you often use the analogy of their size of those shoes and fitting into their shoes and the type of shoes or whatever. You take that analogy all kinds of ways. How are you feeling about those shoes as you now move through and move into your, you know, almost second year?
Yeah, it's been almost it's been a little over a year and a half. You know, I think I'm always going to have a little bit of that, because I also see her as such a phenomenal mentor.
Yeah.
And I look up to her. I really do. I mean, what she's done is, like, she's done some incredible work, and I'm, you know, I still partner with her, you know, and I still collaborate with her. I think maybe it's part of my fear of not being enough is my not being enough to the other districts. Yeah. I'm sorry about that.
It's okay.
And maybe that's their issue and not mine. And so maybe that's what we have to let go of. Bella, please.
I think she's really agrees with you. It's like, yes, Mom, that's exactly right. Let it go.
Yeah. And so maybe I have to stop wondering if it's me, and maybe, you know, if they're, you know, if they're comparing, then that's their issue and not mine. And I don't even know that that's happening. I think it's might be just my fear or my perception because I look up to her so much.
Yeah, totally. That's really good, Dana. I think, you know, we always say that comparison is the thief of joy. And, you know, it'd be beautiful to find a way to capitalize upon all the great things that she can still give to you without comparing, because then, you know, or fearing that other people are comparing because they're probably not even thinking about her, unfortunately.
Yeah, I think, you know, and I think that's the line I'm trying to walk is how do I do this work, continue the great work that she's done, but then also bring my own, my own goals and initiatives and things forward. Yeah. So it's
not easy. Do others have comments or any questions come to your minds or any of those? Yeah, I hate to use the me too, but I phrase because of what it does and has stood for, but I also find myself kind of like Jill started us off saying like, me too, or I feel like that too, or I see that too. So I think it's a good thing to know that we're not.
Nice to not be alone.
Yeah, agreed.
Dana, I was just going to say, for whatever reason, the visual image of you today with the blue sky behind you and a little bit of like darkness in the foreground, really, I think, represents a lot of what you're sharing. Like, there's so much possibility and so much openness and expansiveness around you and the work that you're doing. And I don't know, I guess I wanted to comment on the blue sky behind you.
Thank you, Heidi. I do feel like a sense of positivity moving forward. I really do. Thank you. Thank you.
So whenever someone else is ready to jump in with their talk story, go for it.
I'll go, this is Susan. Well, I too feel very grateful for the opportunity, and I'm kind of patting myself on the back that I finally said like yes and like made time for it in my schedule.
It's kind of been 4 years later, you know, counting.
Baby steps, Christy, baby steps.
It's okay. It was waiting for you.
But I do really appreciate your guys' willingness to listen. And I know that that was part of the structure of this, but I can say that I'm not sure that I've ever really had that experience where people were really just listening. And when you did ask questions, they weren't necessarily to get a specific answer or to learn more. They were to kind of help me think differently or maybe more broadly. And that was, it's kind of crazy to think about that, that I don't think I've ever had that experience, even with some of the best of colleagues and supervisors and that kind of thing. It just, this isn't how we do business. So that was a really, I feel like it was a real gift because I needed that space. I do also think it was very quick. It did feel really quick. And I'm still working on my pledge, but I have given a lot of thought to kind of my goals and things like that. But a couple other things have come up. I mean, you guys know that I feel like I've been kind of just uncomfortable for a while. And I've been looking around for the source of my discomfort, but in like a sly way, not really talking to people on my team about it for fear of like, well, what will they think if, you know, they think that I don't know what the heck I'm doing, or if I'm not confident, or not my supervisors, because it feels like, well, I probably shouldn't tell them I don't know what I'm doing. So I've been really kind of doing it in this like sly way, but I've been questioning things like, you know, am I lacking skills? Am I lacking passion? Maybe it's motivation. Maybe I'm just not motivated anymore. Or is it something external to me? Should I be like pointing my finger at someone else or something else? You know, lots of days where I've said, I just really don't know how much longer I can do this. Mm-hmm. And this is just this like wheel that I feel like I'm on a lot of times, kind of feeling exhausted and just really feeling my passion waning. I don't really think my passion is waning. I think it's sort of hidden underneath the long list of to-dos or whatever it's hidden underneath. But I think that some of my fear of shedding some of the ways that I have worked over the past years has minimized, it hasn't completely gone away, but it has minimized or lessened, because I feel like you guys really asked me some good questions. You shared some really great resources that kind of just got me to think a little differently. I also think that journaling, I'm terrible at keeping it up. Truly, I get in stages and then I kind of put it down and I don't come back to it for some reason. But when I do it, it always produces something. It always produces this like, oh, gosh, what does that mean? I wonder why I wrote that, you know, how did that come out? I think some of the things I'm still tossing around, well, I'm still tossing around a lot of stuff, let's be honest, but some of the kind of the big things that I'm still tossing around are just, for me, that idea of what are the choices that I'm making every day, whether it be personally or professionally, what kind of energy am I putting out into the world and what am I getting back? And I don't think I've thought enough about that yet, but I think it's, I have a feeling that it's this cycle, that if I'm putting out this exhausted energy or this, oh, this meeting is one more thing I have to do, or, you know, that kind of thing, that what comes back to me is maybe some similar version of that from the folks that are in the meeting or from my team. So it's just something I'm thinking about. I think the other thing that I've thought on and off about for a while, and I know I mentioned I got sick a couple years ago, but I don't think I elaborated much on it, except to say that after my treatment and everything, I came out, and I think I've shared this with Christy maybe, and I came out feeling like I should like all of a sudden know the path.
Yeah.
And I haven't, it has not been easy. If anything, it brought up more questions for me. It brought up like, shoot, what are you doing? Like, this is like a second chance. And so I still am kind of playing around with that. Like, what does it mean? Again, these choices I make every day are mine in terms of how I spend my time. And I feel like I've been kind of just in this rut. So I think, so that's something that came up again for me. And it also came up for me because I don't know how many of you know her, but a colleague in the field who's not going to get the second chance. Sorry, I've cried about Sandy like so many times, but truly, I'll pull myself together. Truly, it got brought up again for me to say like, this, I think more is within my control than outside of my control. And I really firmly believe that now. And so now it's really up to me to say, okay, what are the choices you're making? So I'm gonna move on from that. The other thing that has been really driving me crazy, and I shared a little bit about this at some point, was that my my tendency from the four tendencies quiz is an obliger. What the heck? Why? Like, truly, that's how I feel. Like, oh, that's a gross thing to be. Why do I need external accountability? Like, I feel like, wow, I'm this like motivated person, and I get, you know, I have a team, and I've spent my career kind of pushing myself and challenging myself, and then to find out like, huh. And it's funny because I don't like attribute everything I do to being an obliger, but when you read, it was helpful to read some of her stuff, not just about what your tendency is, but to think about it in terms of how you do your work and what you choose to focus on. So that's been interesting to me. I don't like it, but I am, trying to learn more about that and learn more about how that influences the choices that I make, quite honestly. I'm not kidding when I say that I put myself last in almost every way. And I'm sure lots of other people do too. Lots of other women, I think it's not an uncommon problem, but, one of my goals is to eat breakfast. This seems like it should be kind of easy. I can't tell you. Well, actually, I ate breakfast when I was traveling this week in DC because I was at a hotel and they served breakfast. So I literally had to walk through. But I really do. I put myself last in a lot of ways. Like, there's always other stuff that feels like it trumps what I need. So that is truly going to be one of the guideposts for me in terms of what I work on moving forward. Because I think it's not just about eating breakfast. It's about kind of everything in my work life and my professional life. It really is kind of the underpinning. So okay. So anyway, I think I shared what I thought was super helpful about this journey. I was able to also share a little bit about this with my husband, and because he knows that I've been struggling, you know? And so he's a really good listener and he's a good thinker, but he said to me, "None of this is hard. Just do it." And I was like, okay, we're done. So I just thought that was a little funny. Real life comes in. Just do it. What's the big deal? You know? So I think at some point in something I read, we were supposed to think about kind of what the future looks like, 5 years, 10 years, something like that. And I honestly don't know how to answer that. I'm working on kind of thinking about what next week looks like and next month and maybe next year. But when I really think about it, at the end of the year, maybe what I'd like to see is more space in my days to focus my energies on activities that really are in support of both myself, but also in support of others. So one of my values that came out when I did my values and my mindset work was really service to others, and not just in a professional way, also in a personal way. My family is important to me, you know, those kinds of things. And so I feel like I've been pushing off a lot of those softer type things, like just sitting down and having the power that I got from you guys listening to me was so huge that I want to be able to do that to some extent. Obviously I can't spend all that time, but to some extent, I want to be able to do that for the people that are on my team. I want to give them the space to be able to share what they're thinking about at their pace, rather than the way it really has been, which has been always agendas, always, you know, we got to get through this whole list of things to do. So that was so powerful for me. My hope is that I will see space in my days that I can be that in some small way for some others on our team. Mm-hmm. I'd also like to see me deep on very few projects. Mm-hmm. But our team as a whole doing some really cool, innovative, fun stuff. That's a little nebulous, but that's my big goal, I think.
So, two things came to my mind, and then please others too. I'm going to use, I can't remember, but I think it was Jenna who reframes.
Oh.
How does she do that? I don't know. Dana, do you know Jenna from UNLV?
Yeah, Waltz.
Jenna Wegler's Ward.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's why I call her Jenna. Says a person that can't say their own name. But Jenna was at Champaign-Urbana, so Susan knows her well before she came to Las Vegas. Anyway, she does this reframe with R's and sign language, somehow like she reframes something. So I was channeling her. And I was just thinking, I too have been thinking a ton, of course, about Sandy and all the people in my life that, you know, do or don't or will or have and all those things. So my invitation would be, or my goal or dream, I don't know what the word is, Susan, is that you can reframe your second chance without a layer of guilt. That's my dream for you. I won't say more than that. You know what I mean by that.
Yeah.
And then I would say breakfast is highly symbolic of a larger issue for you. So I wouldn't diminish it or apologize for it or say, oh, I'm sure other people struggle with it. For you, breakfast is symbolic of a larger mission that you're on. And so use that as the representation it has for the greater meaning that you're seeking, and don't diminish it.
So. Thank you.
Yeah.
I always joke that I blame all my guilt on my Catholic upbringing. I'll just do it. I don't know. I don't know if it's true, but it works.
It's, you know, I've got it too. And my Catholic upbringing, you know, I told my mom I gave it up for Lent, and it still gets you, you know, and it does. It's, I think it's part of a lot of things. I think you're right. But I think there's something with what Dana said, or what we all think about our ought self and our should mm-hmm. self. And I can only imagine what you went through, and I can only imagine how it feels to be some survivor guilt, some I'm squandering it guilt. I mean, like, I can't even imagine, Susan, yeah. all the layers of it. So that's why it's a dream for you, just to have it and not judge it. But I have no idea how one would do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's just my dream for you.
Thank you.
Anybody else want to jump in, comment?
Susan, I just wanted to say how much I've appreciated from the very beginning the ways in which you're able to articulate so clearly the importance for you of being at integrity and figuring out, it feels like there's always this balance going on for you about lining up your intentions and your heart with your actions. And I just have really appreciated that about you.
Thank you.
So girls, if you want, we can just take just a minute to break and just kind of like, I have to get a tissue, to be honest, for just a minute. That's why I don't normally wear makeup, but I read that stupid girl stop apologizing. And she said, if you're going to like feel confident and be out in the world, you got to like show up and be put together. Well, this for me is put together. Then people start making me cry. And then I'm like, well, what do you do when you have makeup on and you start crying? Like that would be a problem.
I thought about whether I was even going to bring that piece up or I was just going to extract it. And I was like, because I can't cry. I don't want to cry on this because this is a good thing. But then I was like, oh, I got to be authentic. I got to just say what's on my mind.
No, and I appreciate it because I don't want to, you know, just Facebook talk about it, you know?
Yeah, right.
So, all right, girls, let's just take a minute. We'll regroup and then we have 3 more talk stories to share, okay?
I'll share my screen on and off. I like seeing faces, though, so you can read the crowd.
I'll let you do what you want to do, Jody. You're fine. You know how to do it.
Before I show some of the pictures I found, I will share just the process of the mastermind. For me, I was nervous coming in because I felt like I was at a different level of leadership mm-hmm. than the rest of you. I feel like I'm probably one of the people most of you supervise more so. So it's been interesting to me to hear your struggles, you know, and I think kind of that one more level removed from practitioner level kind of a thing. So, and the people I support are you in my region. I've been asked to support the leaders who are leading teams in the region. And so it's been interesting to hear some of your struggles because I hear some of the same things coming from the leaders that I'm supporting. And sometimes I feel like we're so focused on the practices mm-hmm. that supporting that emotional part for leaders, I need to do a better job of that. So, and that's where my first goal was. If I look back, my first goal when I started was to be more present in my conversations with leaders so that I could really have some powerful interactions with them and make sure I was being responsive to their needs. So I think this has been really a good format for me because it's really been easy for me to be present and listen. Mm. Not a lot of distractions. So I got to practice that and really think about how I can create conditions when I have interactions with leaders that will support me and being fully present for them because they deserve that. Also, the other thing I will say is sometimes I get a little panicked about early childhood and early childhood special ed field, the field in general, about the power of the profession and where we're headed and the accountability that's being thrown at us. And I panic and think, are we doing enough as a, you know, I think big picture. And I get a little nervous and I'm like, I feel that sense of urgency that we, you know, we've got attention. We need to do things now. We need to act now. I can say that having this, I've found great comfort in that there's a bunch of amazing people out there doing this work. You guys are all amazing in what you're doing. And oh, I can feel like, oh gosh, there are some really cool, great, thoughtful, insightful people out there across the U.S. who are powering forward with this profession. So I am grateful for that. But then the unexpected side, I'm not always great at self-discovery. It's not a thing I spend a lot of time on. So I really was a little skeptical about how that was going to go for me. And I'm pleasantly surprised that I've discovered some new things about me and my journey as a leader. So here, I love photography. That's one of my goals too at the beginning was to get more back to photography. So I decided that I will share my journey a little bit with some of my pictures.
Oh, good.
So,
okay.
Yes. So here's, this is how I feel during brainstorming. If you remember my first hot seat, right? I
feel like cobwebs around it.
The drippy faucet, my brain is like kind of foggy from the cobwebs. And I, it takes me a second to even figure out what we're talking about. And then it's over. And they say, thank you. We'll take your ideas and go. And I wait, and this is my true self. And then this is my aunt self. I wish that was more. I did not take that picture, but so that was kind of the first hot seat. And I tend to sketch while I was on the hot seat, I was sketching some things. And so I took my sketches and kind of overlaid them on some of my pictures I've taken. And So here's, you know, Christy, in your notes, it was the both and for me, and really thinking in terms of both and so a couple of the things I'm looking for is a little more reflection and action in my journey, and also some consumption and creation. Finding both, and you can see that little hummingbird, she's off to create a nest, but she also had to consume a little bit there. So thinking of those two things, you know, brought me to the analysis paralysis, and that's, this is the sketch I made that day when I was talking about my analysis paralysis, because I'm in Gretchen Rubin's Four Tendencies on the Questioner. And I'm with you, Susan, as far as sometimes that feels like an icky thing to be. It can be a problem, but then I had to really dig into, what do I bring to the team? Where's that sweet spot?
Yeah.
Digging into those superpowers a little bit more. But, you know, it definitely, the analysis paralysis when I'm working on a project, it's one more tab, one more article, one more book, one more expert, one more opinion. Give me one more day, one more week, give me one more month. And, you know, it can just go on. And I realized that I really need to move from receiving and managing information to acting upon it and doing my job. And as I read a lot about analysis paralysis, one of my favorite articles was This Science of Analysis Paralysis by Becky Kane. And there were just some things that I was like, whoa, yep, that's it. That feeling of I'm just not ready to share my ideas yet. And so some of the strategies that she talked about in that article was, you know, start before you feel ready. Know that you have enough to get started and the rest can happen along the way. And if you wait until you feel completely ready, you're waiting too long. And then also that idea of limiting the information that I consume as I dig into a project. Because again, I probably already have enough to get started. And then I really was intrigued by her idea of making your decision the right one. Uh-huh. That I sometimes have an idea that there's only one right decision, or that I need to make the best decision or face consequences, which I don't know where that comes from because nobody says that. But the idea that there might be several right decisions and you need to start somewhere and then have iterations of that and get feedback on that first decision and know that we can keep improving upon things. So I did make notes of this because I actually have several teammates who are also questioners and we compare notes. And so I thought they might appreciate some of this information. So we're going to get together and talk about it a little bit. But then, you know, I wanted to dig into Susan Cain's work a little bit more, The Quiet Book. And I had read it, but I started to go through my notes and it was like, I don't know, it was like peeling back that onion. I just got so much more out of it going through it the second time, I think. But this is, you know, a quote that got me when I was thinking about brainstorming, is that we really, introverts need to trust their gut and share their ideas as powerfully as they can. And I think what's important for me is to realize that it's not meaning I need to be an extrovert. So she goes on to say, this does not mean aping extroverts. Ideas can be shared quietly. They can be communicated in writing. They can be packaged into highly produced lectures, and they can be advanced by allies. And the trick for introverts is to honor your own style instead of allowing yourself to be swept up in prevailing norms. And I think I find myself often being swept up. But the part about being advanced by allies, that was really important. That was a discovery for me because I realized I'm doing that. I have a teammate who I often call upon, and I shared some of this work with her this morning, and she's like, oh my gosh, I love that you're a drippy faucet, Jody. She said, those drips get my mind going. And she's like, I want you to start writing down the drips. So we talked a little bit about journaling, and I realized I journal, but I journal other people's ideas. I take note of everything I read in quotes, but I don't journal my reflections or my connections. Mm. And so then when Sally wants to pick my brain, as she calls it, she'll say, I need your brain for a minute. You know, will you call me? And I'm like, what? Tell me what my brain does for you. So having these conversations with her, and then, you know, she asked me the same thing. She's like, you often say, I need to talk through things with you. What do I do for you? So I think as a team, we're really trying to figure out how we can support each other to leverage all of our superpowers and really keep those ideas flowing as a team. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, Sally's like, she has taken several of my ideas to the team, and I just feel like, and she pointed out to me, and I'm just going to jump ahead a little bit. She said, I don't think that for you, the hard work is the idea. It's you want to get your idea shaped up so that everybody will understand it. Because in your brain, you understand it. I think the part she was guessing that I struggled with was trying to get it so that it fits into our system and makes sense to other people so it might be accepted. And so then I found that there was an article from Todd Henry where he talked, I think the name of the article was Why Your Good Ideas Aren't Being Acted Upon or something like that. And he talked about this, and it just resonated with me so much that, and I think this is where I put a lot of my time and effort, is I'm very diligent about how I share my ideas, or I'm very conscious of that. And I'm afraid I haven't got my sales pitch just right, so I hold on to them.
Mm.
And he talked about this idea of then those ideas are going to die on the vine, you know? So Sally suggested to me, as she was coaching me through this conversation, was to really maybe start more of an idea journal where I'm capturing ideas and connections and thoughts about the work, rather than just regurgitating other people's work. And that really made a lot of sense. So I am going to get back to journaling. Sally's going to be an accountability partner. She's going to make me share a couple ideas. And then she's really that, she's, if I'm the generator, she's the enabler. She's more the person who can shape it into fitting into our system, because she's been doing this job longer. She understands the systems really well. And then if you guys don't know this book, I'm not going to play it for you, but there's a book called What Do You Do With an Idea? And it's a children's book, and you can look it up. This is the YouTube video of somebody reading it. And it's amazing how, that author captures my struggles with ideas a little bit. So if you have a chance, check it out. So then in the journey, I mentioned that one time that we had come to some norms about, one of our norms is adventure, and I was panicking a little bit about that. Mm-hmm. And so in the Quiet book, she talks a lot about Brian Little's work from Harvard University, and it's called free trait theory. Is the whole idea that introverts were capable of acting like extroverts for the sake of work that we consider really important, or for people we love, or anything we value real highly. But he shares some funny stories. Brian Little talks about, you know, there's a trade-off for that. Mm-hmm. It can be exhausting for introverts. And that we need to make sure we're finding restorative niches. Which really struck me, those places we can go when we want to return to our true self. And so one day I journaled about my restorative niches and talked to, you know, really thought through that, and that was helpful. And then he also talked about striking fair trait agreements with yourself and others. And those agreements are a lot like the boundaries and policies where you agree that you might need to act out of character some of the time in exchange for being yourself the rest of the time. And I think I need to think about that a little bit with the PDF adventures that are very important to many of my team members. I need to come up with an agreement that, okay, you know, I'll go to three of the 9 you plan throughout the year. But they need to understand that those are not easy for me and the best way for me to build relationships. And then the final chapter, the final page in Susan Cain's book, I just basically highlighted the whole thing. So I'm just going to read this one passage, and the quote starts here. It says, "The secret to life is to put yourself in the right lighting. For some, it's a Broadway spotlight. For others, it's a lamplit desk. Mm-hmm. Use your natural powers of persistence, concentration, insight, and sensitivity to do work you love and work that matters. Solve problems, make art, think deeply. Spend your free time the way you like and not the way you think you're supposed to. Make a deal with yourself that you'll attend a set number of social events in exchange for not feeling guilty when you beg off." So that whole last chapter of her book, I've read her conclusion several times, and it's just very comforting to me. She also has great tips for managers and leaders for supporting more introverted folks on the team. And one of the things she cautions is brainstorming and group thinking, and that's not really even a research-based process for getting creative ideas. And she explains why and some alternatives. And I thought that was really important for me to read as well. Mm-hmm. And finally, so the last thing, and you know, this was a rabbit hole, which, you know, I love rabbit holes. So somebody had asked me in one of the hot seats what I brought to the table, what I might do that others don't do on the team. And I just kind of blurted out that I think I noticed things that maybe others don't. And I didn't really know where that came from. And so I started to just look around for noticing. And there's a book called The Art of Noticing. And Rob Walker has done all this work on cultivating noticing and that it's an important skill. And I'm like, well, who knew? And so for fun, I got his book. And one of my pledges is that I'm going to practice some of these activities because I find it really helpful for photography and for my work. And so if you aren't familiar with his book, like one of the activities is called write a review. And so you choose a sound or something that you've smelled, felt, been looking at a lot lately, and you write a Yelp review for it and what you notice about it. And so there are just these fun little different activities that really get you to be a little bit more mindful and intentional. So that has been kind of a fun little side journey for me that I discovered as a result of all of our work together. And then I have not done my pledge yet, but these are just some of the things that I'm thinking about is really practicing that art of noticing in my work and photography, reading more with a purpose when preparing for a project and setting limits on how much info I consume, starting before I feel ready, journaling and organizing my thoughts and ideas to support action, and then having an accountability partner there, creating and sharing some of those free trade agreements, and then really advocating and supporting other introverted leaders and team members. And I think, you know, in 10 years, I'm hoping I'm still excited about early childhood and early childhood special ed and still pushing, you know, the profession forward. Christy, your dad's quote that you shared in the deep dive that one time about don't push the universe, move one feather at a time. I love that. And I often remind myself of that. But I don't want to stop pushing altogether. So, yeah, I mean, there's been a lot of self-discovery, and the questions you asked me during the hot seat. I feel like, you know, I kind of moved away from even the practice problems into more of that self-discovery, and that's not easy for me. So well done. Well done.
I had a couple things. You really want to jump in?
Sorry about that, everybody. I lost my internet connection and I had to reestablish. So I missed the very end there.
So I'll just say a few things and then everybody else to jump in before we go on. So it's a couple things interesting. When I saw your hummingbird, I don't know anything about animals evidently, but I felt like it was consuming when it was drinking from the feeder and it was creating when it was pollinating. So it was just funny how there was a both and in your both and. So that was just my take on interpreting art today. The second thing is interesting that Parker Palmer, you know, who I revere, always says when you take notes, even if you're in a lecture or you're watching something, that you always take notes about what you heard, felt, think about what somebody said versus the direct quotes. So that was interesting that you were having that observation. And then just because I'm reading White Fragility still, many of your comments about introverts and extroverts, I'm feeling like there's actually this, that extroverts are sort of like the white people, that like that's the goal or the norm or the ones in the power of the loudest voice. I don't know why, but for me, everything you said was sort of like how do introverts assimilate? How do introverts make their way and negotiate so they're not, you know, seen as bad? Whereas we didn't, it's almost like we've decided that the extrovert is the place of good and the other is an aberration of some sort. So it was just my own wonderings about that.
Yeah, and in Susan Cain's book, she talks about that, the extrovert ideal, and that there was someone from Harvard who even wrote an article about, you know, to be successful in the business world, you need to act like an extrovert, even if you aren't. And she kind of took him to task on that. So that chapter was interesting. So she really, her work is all about trying to lead a little bit of a revolution that maybe there's value to be had in extroverts, you know, having some more introverted qualities when problem solving and things like that. So, yeah, I mean, she really talks about striking a balance and making sure that you aren't showing up not your true self too often, but that if you need to do it to get your idea across and it will help the work, then you might need to do that, but just to be careful. Mm-hmm.
All right. Thanks, Jody.
I wanted to say thanks for sharing some of your pictures and the visual kind of aids that went along with what you were sharing. It was a very effective way of illustrating your talk story. So thanks for that. And then, of course, as an INTJ, meeting another INTJ, which is, I think, fairly unusual, actually, to maybe have two of us in one group. A lot of what you said resonates deeply with me because it feels like looking in a mirror a little bit sometimes. So that's mm-hmm. been an interesting experience for me. It's been great having you as a part of this group.
Thank you for that. And that's the other, I'm panicking a little bit because I do have 85 million questions for all of you. And so I'm hoping that email or the Facebook group will be a place where we could maybe continue and get to ask some of those more resource-based questions for the questioner and me.
Yeah, I can say something that really quickly and then we can go to our next two talk stories. But for sure, the Facebook group can stay open for as long as you all collectively want me to keep it open. And then absolutely to continue to reach out to each other is not required, but highly, highly encouraged. That's one of my goals for a mastermind, is that you leave with a group that if you met each other face-to-face, it would feel like no time had passed. If you needed something, that this is your ally group, myself included, that you could go to without reservation, without apology, without anything. And needing anything in return. So just logistically, the Facebook group, the dashboard will stay there, and I'll add a lot of the things that Jody just shared. I'll go ahead and dump those on our dashboard for archival, but that'll be open always. So you'll always have your notes, you'll have each other's notes, you'll have our recordings, you'll have links, easy ways. I can easily put your email addresses as links, but you have those in your e-member, your ebook of members only. So yeah, so definitely we can keep all of those pieces and parts. And if you guys ever wanted to get together physically, we could always try to do that. And if you ever wanted to mastermind again, we could do that. Okay. Heidi or Catherine, who wants to go next and last?
I'll go next.
Okay.
That's okay. So I think like the others, I feel like we're just kind of getting started and we shouldn't stop here, but I do recognize it's over. It did feel kind of short. But I definitely feel like I got quite a bit out of this. I wasn't sure when I started what I was going to be getting out of it. But I think it was a pretty cool experience. One of the things I've started journaling again, and I hadn't in a while, and it's been nice to kind of get back into that practice. It helps in so many ways, you know, and it's something I don't know why I avoid for so long, but I do. But even just like sleep quality, it's like a huge difference. And I don't know for you guys, but for me, like sleep and outlook on life go hand in hand. So if I'm sleeping well, things are usually a lot more positive anyway. So that's been kind of cool. You know, I've definitely been able to recognize that I've kind of been, I don't know if the word rut is, I've kind of been in a negative headspace around work for the last couple years. You know, I had the opportunity for a couple of years to have an amazing director, and I loved coming to work every day, and it was exciting, and we did some good, you know, I've never worked that hard in my whole life, but it was so fun. And then, you know, it's not that it's our leadership in our district has some, I think, some major concerns. And so that person was kind of outed of the district really unfairly. And I've held on to a lot of resentment and bitterness about that, I think. So I think one of the things I need to work on is either making peace with it, because this is where I still work and these are the people I work around, or not, but then doing something different. You know, like, I think I'm in this place where I keep wanting them to be different and they won't be. So it's kind of that acceptance, like, this is what we got, at least for the next 5 years or something. And so you kind of just have to work with it, I think. And so it's getting to that place where, you know, like I can kind of see now what I'm bringing into it. And then as far as, you know, it's been really exciting for me to hear what you all are doing out in the real world, out down in America. because there's some great stuff happening and that's inspiring. You know, Alaska's always going to be a little bit behind, but it's good to know what we should be aiming for, and to kind of hold that idea that it could be and should be a lot different than it is here, and to keep moving towards that and moving that needle a little bit. You know, it's kind of a discouraging political climate right now, like really, like this is the worst I've ever seen it. So it'll be an interesting year to see how people will come back and how work will move forward or what will get stopped. but it's not permanent, you know? So even if it's a step back, I don't think it's ever a permanent step back. It might take a few years to rebound and get better again. So I was working on the pledge. You know, I struggle with goal setting because I always feel like my goals aren't worthy, like goal worthy. Like it's not like I'm going for this new job or to get my doctorate or to, I don't know, move to South America. Like they're not that important, but maybe they are. Because really, the job I want to have is the job I have now. I just want to do better at it. I want it to be more effective. And really, really what I want is to keep working with my team and my department here to keep pushing for having inclusive opportunities for kids. And, you know, like, any growth is good growth, I think, in that area. You know, so even if we don't get to 50%, if we can get to 10% and then 20%, you know, like, I think that's a good, like, I need to keep encouraging and advocating and educating our group so we're moving in that direction. So I do think it's a valid goal. Although it doesn't, when I wrote it out, I'm like, I'm missing something, like something isn't here. So I guess that's about all. I've really enjoyed hearing your stories, and I hope to stay connected with you all. It's been a pretty great process. So thank you.
Yeah. So Catherine, you all are some of my most favorite people in the world, but I spent a week or so with Catherine. And so I decided that she was my common law wife, because she spent so much time with me, just hosting me and taking care of me and getting me from point A to point B and laughing at my jokes, even though she'd heard them all week. And so I just always appreciate you, Catherine, and what I was saying about that was that you are just so humble and so like, yeah, my goal is just to impact all the lives of the children of Anchorage. And, you know, that's like nothing. And I'm just like, how is that? Like, if you were to move to South America, it would be like the worst thing for the families of South America. And here it is. You have this beautiful goal to create a sense of belonging for them. And you're like, yeah, I guess it's worthy. But anyway, it just makes me smile that you're just so incredibly, I don't know, you're just one of the most consistent and humble people that I know, and I just appreciate. And so I love that goal, and it makes me feel hopeful for all of the families that I know that you support in all so many ways in Anchorage. So
thank you.
Not that you need external validation, but if you did, it's like gold star. yeah. Other people have some connections or some comments you want to share about inclusion? And I always think of you, Dana, when you've got to feel good about your numbers when you talk to Catherine.
Yeah, and then it's just, you know, I think sometimes we want such big results, but I think it's okay to live in baby steps, because, you know, it's like, how do you eat an elephant? It's like, it's just one bite at a time, right? And, you know, I remember like, last year when our inclusion growth was, you know, about 1%, we grew about 1%. And, you know, at first it was like, oh, you know, but then when I tore it apart, I really said, and then what I was sharing with our districts was that was 100 children that we made an impact for. That's 100 children that had the opportunity to play with their peers. That's 100 families that got to walk their children to their neighborhood school that didn't have to put their kid on a bus to go to some special program, you know. So, you know, I said this impacted, you know, that 1% might seem small, but that was 100 children that had an opportunity that they did not have, you know, a year or 2 years ago. So I think living in baby steps is okay. And I'm okay with that. So
That's good. Giving goosebumps.
Similarly to something that Jody talked about, I think of you, Catherine, as like one of the administrators that myself and my team, you know, is likely to be supporting across the state of Colorado, but you just happen to be in Alaska. And it's really helped me, I think, feel a sense of connection to the work that those that we support in districts or that are doing, really doing the hard work of actually supporting kids and families. Cause I often think, you know, I'm a little far removed from that. And I don't always like being removed this far, but it was really valuable for me to hear the direct kind of struggles and issues that administrators face in districts to do the hard work of really the lifting, the weightlifting of what inclusion is all about is done by people like you, Catherine. So thank you for that.
Thank you.
I'll just reflect on your South America or whatever comment, just this piece. And I've been listening to some work by Brené Brown, and she talks about this aspect that for some reason in ordinary life or ordinary moments can become synonymous with a meaningless life, and that we're looking for the extraordinary, that it's got to be, you know, that big piece, like you're saying, when you think of this goal, is it, you know. And so she, you know, comments that, you know, joy happens in those ordinary moments. And I think, Dana, what you were saying too, that 1%, it doesn't always have to be this extraordinary piece, and that always looking for that. Don't let it minimize the ordinary moment. So
that's a good way to look at it. Thank you. I like that.
All right, Miss Heidi, whenever you're ready.
Okay. Oh my goodness. Yeah, I guess maybe it's apropos that I go last since I didn't even join the very first session. I'm still like, oh my gosh, I can't believe that was me. But it was. So that was my start to meeting all of you. And like everyone else, this went by so rapidly. The condensed nature of it, on one hand, I think facilitated kind of this rapid movement, right? Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, it's a little bit disconcerting to realize, like, oh, this is the end now. And I approach a lot of things, I guess, as feeling like I'm not done or there's more and I need more time. So that's kind of how I'm feeling at the moment. But I'm moving into like figuring out, okay, well, this part of the experience is over, but what am I going to glean from it to move into kind of my daily life and work? And so I do have something that I'll share. It's not, I have to say, when I saw the example of Hattie, I feel very, very, like an underperformer here. So, but that's all.
That's
all what I'm struggling with. So I guess it all works. Let me make sure. Now I think I'm sharing my calendar instead of what.
Oh, that'll make us all want to hurl.
Yes.
Hang on. There's me.
Can you see?
Yeah,
I don't know what you're looking at.
Much better.
A circle with some hearts around it.
Yes.
Okay. yeah, so I this first part, this is just a word page that I tried to write some notes on in more of a linear way than I would like, but wanted to get down some of what I was thinking about. And as I was thinking about just a visual that might illustrate some of what I'm taking away from this experience is what I put inside of this circle, which I'm thinking of as kind of me, with all of you around the outside, as helping me kind of hold the space for me being able to generate some of these ideas about where I want to focus time and energy as a developing leader. And so first of all, you know, I knew before I started that renewal is something that I need to be doing for myself right now. And the the opportunities for doing the reflection as a part of the initial component of each of our times together, but also that notion of like reflecting in between has been something that I've been missing. And something that I need as an introvert as well. Well, it's something that all of us need as leaders, I'm sure, but something that I recognize I haven't been doing enough of to really get the renewal that I need. So that's something I'm really holding on to as a connection from this time together. And then you've all heard me talk about this probably from the beginning, but I've been working for a while on focusing more on the being part of myself than the doing, because I've been so focused for so long on performance and doing. And so these were just some of the quotes or the little phrases that I, you know, noticed in my notes over and over from each of our times together, whether it was about reflecting on a quote or whether it was taking a moment to look at one of the resources. But these were things that just really resonated and kind of I felt underscore the journey that I was on with all of you. So that's my little circle thing. Then I have just some written notes here that that I'll share. And a lot of these, you know, relate to either being on the hot seat or just looking at some of the resources that we looked at together. But I think this kind of ongoing consideration for me in a lot of what I take on in thinking about, am I acting based on what others expect of me, or am I acting based on, you know, something that I've determined is appropriate for me, is an important thing for me to continue to be able to reflect on, because I do find myself often trying to live up to other people's standards. That's the performance nature that has been really ingrained in me, which I think is ironic, actually, that I, in the four tendencies thing, I came up as a questioner. I'm not surprised I'm a questioner, but some of what was said there about a questioner, about maybe only like resisting doing things that other people suggest for you if you don't think it's like a good on your own. So I don't know, there's some juxtaposition there of things that didn't totally make sense to me, but I'm like, huh, well, maybe I'm moving away a little bit from having to dictate my own actions based on what other people think. So that's
exactly what I was thinking, Heidi. So that's interesting. Yeah. I'll be curious, maybe you're in between two worlds, you know.
Yeah, well, that could be. Just some of the things that I'm working on relate to trusting myself more. I really appreciated one of the quotes that I think was in the notes that you took, Christy, from my first hot seat, which had to do with maybe not giving up this notion of being prepared, because I never feel quite right if I haven't had a chance to do preparation. So maybe more it's about being prepared, but not having to control the outcome of things. So sometimes for me in the past, preparation had to do with making sure that a particular outcome was achieved. And so, I think being open to being flexible and having things iterate is an important part of being a leader. A lot of that's about trusting myself, but it's also about trusting others and trusting the process. And maybe just giving up a little bit of the, you know, white knuckling things or expecting to know at the beginning what the outcome is going to be for everything. So I think, you know, just in general, part of my journey is also around stopping some behaviors that, which you even heard at the beginning of this, I'm still like judging myself for not showing up to the first session, for example. So giving, you know, continuing to move away from those kinds of behaviors, definitely something I'm working on. And then the, like I said a minute ago, the four tendencies rating, I'm going to maybe take that again, because like a true questioner, I'm like, I don't know if that's right. I think I better do it again and make sure. I'll probably be the obliger next time. I don't know. I'll answer the questions so that I'll get a different response. But that's in spite of the fact that at first I was like, no, that's not really, like, that's not the one I thought I would be. Obviously, I am a questioner, and I actually, a lot of people are either sometimes the questioning is useful for people, and sometimes it's really off-putting to people, I will say, because I do tend to question everything, and it can get exhausting for other people maybe to be around me, to always be asking questions about things. And that being said, I think, you know, maybe some of the questioning that I've done, if I'm really honest with myself, sometimes of stress or in sometimes of overwhelm, sometimes those questions are maybe, they can be, to prove my own point or to get my own, ideas across instead of to support others to generate their own ideas. And so I really, I tried to work really hard as a listener, while others were in the hot seats, to come up with open, honest questions. And it was so much harder than I expected, because as a natural questioner, I'm like, oh, I'm sure I can do that. But then I'm like, every question I was thinking of, I'm like, wait, I don't know. I'm not sure. Is that open enough? Is that, you know, unstructured enough? So I think that was a really valuable part of this for me, was being able to think about the role of questions in general as a leader, and in supporting staff in particular, thinking about, you know, how do I generate kind of on the spot, because maybe not unlike Jody, and I don't want to suggest, but I know for myself, it takes me some time actually to generate the question or to come up with the ideas about what I might want to know about something. And so when I'm supporting staff in one-on-ones or things, I'm sometimes find myself drifting away from what they're saying to try to come up with the right question or response. So listening, which goes back to my like being present and that part of my kind of self-growth opportunity. And then you know, I'm still wrestling a lot with the conversation that we had on Tuesday related to kind of inclusion. And I'm really appreciative of having had a chance to just talk out loud and think out loud and hear from all of you about how to support me and becoming more clear about how I might want to be influenced by the work that we might do around what I started out as thinking about inclusion, but now I think is really, you know, maybe more about figuring out how to measure or develop some metrics around children's well-being and these notions around belonging, because I think, you know, we could even get further by abandoning the term inclusion when we're thinking about the work that that might need to happen here in Colorado around that. Because I think, you know, everyone is kind of believes, oh, we've done that. We do that. We're doing that. It's like, well, no, where kids are being served doesn't represent how their service looks. And so there's definitely a lot more to dig into there. I do feel a lot of grief actually that like we're done now, because part of what this gave me was an opportunity in these, you know, chunks of time to kind of stop and think and focus on some of this stuff in ways that I haven't really been able to focus on some of the self-growth stuff and then some of these specific kind of work-related or practice-related questions. So those are the, I guess, just the notes that I was thinking about as I was thinking about preparing for my talk story. Mm-hmm. In terms of my pledge, I kind of dashed this off very quickly. So I definitely plan to revisit it, but just in the spirit of getting it done, I did identify some specific things, which I hope to go back and kind of revise or get a little bit more clear about. But one of the things that I'm committing to is doing at least 5 minutes of reflection each day, which hopefully would go along with some journaling. I liked the kind of reflection on a quote or on a specific thing. Mm-hmm. That was really useful for me. Just having kind of those free-flowing thoughts and ideas to generate and kind of spark my own, really my heart around the work. I tend to be really focused on, well, I operate a lot out of my mind and my intellect, and I do the work out of my heart, but I think sometimes people see me out of my head instead of my heart. Mm. And so I think that reflection and that journaling actually helps me be a little bit more forward facing with that piece of myself. Mm-hmm. I'm also committing to ensuring that I take annual leave on a routine basis because I really need that time for renewal. And then the other piece of this, focusing more on who I want to be than what I do, that relates back to the stuff I said in the circle. And then using open, honest questions and supporting staff. So I've been thinking for a while now about how to modify the structure around the check-ins or the one-on-ones that I do with team members. So I want to challenge myself some around having them generate a lot of the forward movement through responding to open, honest questions, as opposed to me like giving guidance on everything. And sometimes that's a challenge for me because often I might have really specific or clear ideas about direction I want to give. So anyway, so those are the things that I've identified, put some ideas there about how often I want to be kind of looking at my success and some people that I had in mind for. Still, I need to identify some additional people, I think, but I was able to come up with some ideas. And so I'm really grateful for this opportunity. We have several staff who have been doing masterminds kind of under Christy's mentorship with leaders in our state for, I think this is going on the third year now, coming up. And so I was a little bit intimidated, honestly, because I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm so excited that we're doing this. I pressed on that when it first became like an option for us to include that in our contract with Christy. Because I could see the power of it without having done it myself. But then a part of me got a little intimidated, like, and so now I can, I don't know, now I feel like, oh, well, I've done one too.
You're an amazing champion for, so many things. I think that for me, what I've always appreciated about you is how perceptive you are of other people's superpowers. And so I know this isn't your hot seat, but I want to say something and then invite you to something. So people may not know, but when I left the university, I was not completely sure, you know, what I was doing. And I had left with the intention of starting this company with a colleague who then left me, after 6 months as hard as you can imagine, like who wouldn't want to hang out with me for 6 months, right? So then that was like, you know, I hadn't been dumped since like middle school because I'd been married since I was 19, you know, so like, oh my gosh, this is a breakup. And what are you doing? I left my job for this. And anyway, and then Heidi met me, and I've tried to say to her, but I probably haven't articulated it well, not that I'm going to today, but what she saw in me was that I love teaching adults, and that what she first contracted me to do was work with her adult staff, not come in and do more professional development for adults that were working with children, but to actually do what is good professional development, how do adult learners learn, all of that stuff. And it was amazing to me because it was like, that's what I want to do. Like, that's what I do. That's why when I was the happiest at Kent was when I had my tribe of doctoral students, because what I was really doing was working with adults, not helping them work on authentic assessment or social emotional regulation, blah, blah. So I think you guys witnessed that in your short time with Heidi, how perceptive she is and can see your superpowers. Even today in her comments, as each of you shared, she was able so quickly in a organic way, highlight your superpower. So I was thinking as you were talking, Heidi, about that becoming a questioner, and I'm a couple wonderings. I'm wondering if A, because your job has changed, if of course you are changing, so it'll be an interesting place to explore. I think too, I wonder if the questioning is a stepping stone for you. You don't want to tell people what to do, but in your mind, you know what they should do, and you're now in a place where you probably should tell them what to do, but you don't want to tell them. You want them to find it, but get doing it. Do you see the, right? And so you use a question to invite them to see the answer, but they can feel it. And so sometimes that, it's like when we say to children, are you supposed to be playing in this area? Is it really your turn? So I'm asking as a question, but I'm really still telling you. And that might be what you're experiencing, is that you're just in this place right now of trying on different shoes, to use, you know, Dana's analogy, and you're trying to figure out which ones work. And so I think that you're noticing that, to use Jody's word, is really powerful. And notice when people seem put off by your questions. But then reflect on what was the question you asked and what was the intention behind it. Because you're so perceptive, I don't think it'll take you long to see where you need to shape that. That was just how to use your superpower in this place of flux that you might be in. But I can feel that. Yeah. Others, I don't mean to monopolize, so.
Heidi, this is Dana. Sorry, I had to reconnect again. But I just wanted to share with you, because I've had the opportunity to sit in on, you know, 619 meetings with Heidi, I just want to say, your questions are sometimes just so spot on. So don't apologize for your questions, because I, you know, especially as when I was just brand new, sitting in meetings that you were also in, and some of the questions that you asked, just, they probably filled something that you needed, but they definitely served a greater purpose. Mm. So you have amazing questions, and you're a great mentor.
Thanks, Dana. Hope to see you at our meeting on Sunday.
Yes, yes.
Unfortunately, you have to travel tomorrow to get there.
Yes, me too.
Yep.
So thank you. Look forward to seeing you.
Yeah, for sure.
Take a picture.
I wish Susan was there so we could have breakfast together.
Oh, that would be awesome. That would be perfect.
We'll wrap up today with one last individual reflection, and I'll have an invitation for you. But anything else people just want to share across anyone, or to Heidi specifically? Okay. So time is this really weird thing. Like, I don't know how many times today I thought, wow, we're going to have extra time. And then like, holy crap, we're going to go over. And then, oh, we have time. And no, we don't. It's like, well, how is that possible? It's the same amount of, but it's this weird thing. So speaking of time, as time goes, things will become more important, less important, you know, what seems important now, whatever. So as you just, your last reflection for our mastermind, what do you want to hold on to? And some of you have already done that work, but I'd like you to revisit it. Is there a word? Is there a phrase? Is there a feeling? Sometimes I call them your non-negotiables. You can call your core values. You can call it an action step or a goal. But I want you to kind of, as big as it is or as small as it is, can you really think of that something you want to hold on to? Some of you said, I want to hold on to my journaling. Just kind of keep peeling it back a little bit more, one more time of reflection, so that when your life gets so busy and when it feels the overwhelm or when the apologies are flying out because it's so easy and the self-criticism, the self-talk just won't stop. Is there one thing that you can ground yourself with? An image, a phrase, an action even. So with that, let's just take 3 or 4 minutes and think about, and if you want to share it, you can when we come back, but if you just want to write it down or take a picture of it, I want you to have one thing you can hold on to when the storms come and go. Okay, so just 3 or 4 minutes and we'll come right back. And Jody, I was thinking about you today. So if it helps in terms of journaling, one of them, I ran out of pages, but I normally have a journal this big that I take notes in. And then I have a bullet journal that has particular procedures that I follow. And then I have my believe journal. And then I have my daily affirmations journal. And then I have my to-do list journal. So that's what's around me right here, and that's what I have every day, all the time. So, you know.
I kind of feel like hyperventilating right now.
What's that?
I said, I kind of feel like hyperventilating right now.
Can't have
How do you remember what you journal where?
What's that, Dana?
How is it that you can remember what you journal where? I would be remembering.
Well, they have certain purposes. Like, so this one is a to-do list and it's crappy paper, so I just scribble and then I X out when I'm done with it. But this one, my friend from Durango, he gave it to me and it's beautiful, so I only write my daily affirmations in it and it's the only thing I do in it. So they all have certain rules.
Love it.
All right, so so my holding on to, I'll start it and then you all can finish it, is so with all of that said, is that one of my goals, and I and Heidi started it with having more white space. And so one of my affirmations is that I am enough. And I've added to that, that I am enough and I have enough white space. And so whenever I feel hyperventilating or overwhelmed or lost, that's going to be my holding on to, is that I have enough white space. Anybody else want to share? It's just being recorded for the record, or if you're good, that's okay too.
I think what came to my mind is that I just have to trust. I have to trust myself. And I think that's a good start for me is, in moving forward, is to trust that, that I can do these things, that I can move forward, that I can... you know, maybe that I am enough.
I don't know. You have some fancy shoes to wear too.
I have to buy lots of fancy shoes.
Sorry, honey, but I went to this mastermind and my task is to buy lots of good shoes.
Yes, yes, that's it. Thank you. Thank you to everybody. I think also in trusting myself, I just feel so much gratitude. So thank you.
Yep, me too.
Others. I think for me, it's just going to be continue that whole be present, because we just know what a gift it is when we receive it from someone. And I just know if if someone gives me the gift of their time, I owe it to them and myself to be present. Mm.
I shared some already, but I guess like the one word version that I'm taking away from this as we hang up is renewal and the importance of doing that routinely in order for me to bring my best self to work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that word caught your heart a couple times today. So, yeah. All right, my friends. Well, it's the top of the hour, and I know you all have amazing mountains to move and breaths to take. So I'll leave the Facebook open. If people need to remove themselves for whatever reasons over time, go for it. Otherwise, it'll be there, and I'll always percolate little things. I owe a couple of you still some notes, so you'll still hear from me. Seems like a couple of you will see each other. I'm a little jealous, but I'll get to see all of you in the coming weeks and months, so that's exciting for me. Yeah, so we'll just say to be continued. How's that? Until next time? All right. Thank you all for everything, for making this my dream mastermind. So thank you, and just have a fabulous day.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.